a Rayo Original Podcast.
Laura Whitmore, thanks for being here.
Catherine Ryan, thanks for having me.
What do you think your biological age is going to be?
I think my biological age is either going to be really young or really old. It's going to be like 27 or 72.
Your chronological age is 40. Your biological age is... Hello and welcome once again to What's My Age Again? I'm Catherine Ryan and this is the only podcast where we ask our guests to give us their blood for science and my own amusement. We want to know if how old they feel is how old they really are, and the results will leave you gagged. On today's episode, we have the queen of the multi-hyphenate, Laura Whitmore. She's a presenter, author, podcaster, documentary filmmaker, and actress. One thing I'm sure her test will reveal is that she means business. But how is she coping on a cellular level with the demands of such a successful career? Our tests will reveal all, and as always, Dr. Nicola Conlon is here to interpret those results. Laura Whitmore, thanks for being here.
Catherine Ryan, thanks for having me.
It's always nice to see you in a format setting with questions on cards.
This is weird. It's different to your house because you don't normally have the mic set up on your sofas, but I like it. It's very formal today.
There's less alcohol here.
There is. I was pretty upset about that, but anyway.
It's beautiful, though.
It's gorgeous. It's very bright. It's very pink. Did you design it yourself?
I did.
I like
it. Better lit than my actual home and fewer children.
I don't like to be normally lit this much when I'm in someone's house. I like kind of that kind of dark lighting. Do you know, like that when you go to a restaurant and you can't really see the person you're with?
I don't even care about the menu. I just want to know what the lighting is before I book somewhere. And that's actually how I got with my husband, Bobby, because we were on a night out. He wanted to wee in a kebab shop. And I said, I won't be stumbling into that lighting.
No.
It's like too bright,
like hospital lights. Yeah. No. And also you'd be going in there at 4 a.m. when it's, you know, after a night out, which isn't the best time.
I won't be going in there.
It's bright, but I feel... I'm hoping I'm well lit.
Well, I don't think you need to be well lit.
I do need to be well lit.
Segue to the podcast. You are really beautiful, really glowing. And I know
that's why I come here, because I just want compliments because Catherine's always very nice to me.
We wait till the end to reveal the biological age, but I feel like if it's anything over 7 years old, I'm going to be shocked because you have so much energy. You do so many things. Look at the thickness of these cards.
Says you. I look at you and I get tired.
But I'm not out at night. I'm not out at night. And you do the day and the night.
I'm not. I think I'm like gaslighting people in what I'm doing. Because I'm probably in bed posting a picture from something a few days ago.
Weren't you a few years ago, though, the most photographed woman in Britain?
Like, really?
Yeah. Like
that's
the
not
most...
a good thing, though. Not by choice, I wasn't.
It was pre-daughter, pre-marriage.
Okay, yeah.
I think this is when Leonardo DiCaprio was
You. He walked past me once and it was like, oh... But no, I was too old to be dating him is what I was told.
That's why I was confused by the headline.
I know, because I was like, I think I was 31. I think there was a, no, this can't be true. She's a woman in her 30s. She can't be seen talking to him. Imagine me talking to a boy and not sleeping with him.
I know, but maybe he has changed his type. He goes for biological age.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, what's his cutoff point?
25, I think.
25. Okay, so... If it's over 25, that's my chances with DiCaprio gone.
He's listening in.
He is. I met him. He was very fine.
So you did speak to him?
Yeah.
So hang on a minute, because first you walked past him, didn't speak to him.
No,
now you've spoken to him.
Yeah.
How many times did you have sex?
Sadly, zero. Actually, not sadly. No, not my type.
No.
I like funny boys.
Yeah, I do.
I have a very
funny.
Specific, like, type.
Yeah.
And there was another guy around that time that no one ever knew about.
And he was a funny person?
Yeah.
Like an actual comedian? Peter Kay.
Michael McIntyre. No. No, I just have a very specific type, probably.
Okay.
Like, yeah, that wasn't it.
You're a woman who knows what you
mean. And I wasn't his, I'm sure, as well.
No one reached out to you from his team to be like, Leonardo DiCaprio spotted you. I can't even
say anything. No, I talked to him because it's real life. I talked to him and his friends.
But did he seem interested?
I don't know. Because I was like, I don't know. Because I probably wasn't thinking that way.
Yeah.
If I'm honest with you.
I think you're exactly his type.
He's a bit old.
Yeah.
Is it? But he's very talented and lovely. But he is a bit old. I think he's a bit old for me.
Good.
Sorry. You're too. Because everyone's always saying that it's the other way around. But I kind of feel.
Too old.
I'm with a younger man.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
know. And it's shocking. Everything seems older. The grey beard. But yeah, he's younger than me.
Okay, well, we'll get to your romantic relationships.
I'm a cougar.
Sorry to dive straight into the tabloid stories
about you. No, it was when it was put in the front. It was put in the front of a paper, mm-hmm. and I think they used an image of me from like a magazine in my underwear years ago, which was like a really classy shoot if it was in the right appropriate setting, because it was a fashion shoot. But I was, it made it look like that's what I wore to the BAFTAs.
Out of context.
Out of context. Yeah, love that.
I mean, how could he not notice? If your body could tell the truth about your life so far, what do you think it would say you have done too much of, and what do you think it would say you've done too little of?
I think, this might shock you, I think I'm too sensible.
Yeah.
I'm quite sensible. I've always been very sensible, particularly in my teenage years.
Mm.
I wish I was a bit naughtier.
Sensible in what way? So you never overdid it with the partying?
No, I never overdid it with the partying. I always was the person to bring my friends home or put them in a cab if they got too messy, or I'd leave a party early because I got tired. I was always the first to bed at a house party, but I always got a bed. So do you know when you go to a house party, like especially student days and student accommodation, I'd always get a bed because I'd be the first to go to sleep.
So were you always a young woman with a plan?
I grew up with just my mom, who's fabulous. But like, you know, I would always be very cautious about things. And I was very aware of the world and the dangers of the world.
Yeah.
I remember like having a waitressing job when I was like 17. And it was only like 10 minutes up the road, but I'd always use my tips to pay for a cab home when everyone else would walk, because I was afraid I'd get stabbed and murdered on the way home.
Yeah.
Because that was the reality. I was very aware of things like that that could happen.
And you grew up in County Wicklow?
County Wicklow,
Was there a lot of stabbing going on?
Stabbings happen everywhere. But yeah, there had been, like I remember reading things, maybe because I've always been a little bit obsessed with true crime.
Yeah. But you're just researching for the future podcast.
But my mom, when my mom was younger, and I have said this before in a doc that I did, like my mom was put in a van when she was like 17, 18 on O'Connell Street by a group of guys. And her friend who she was with froze, and my mom said I got stopped at the traffic lights and she pushed her way out because the door was still open. So I remember her telling me that story. So I think I've always been aware of white vans.
So you're sensible from young.
Yeah.
You're out at night, but you're the first one in bed because you want to get the bed at the house party. You want to be sensible, focused. I just see you as being someone, because I read a study about drug abuse and kids who go off the rails, and they interviewed the ones who never went off the rails. And they said, why didn't you do this? Rather than ask the ones, why did you? And all those kids were like, oh, well, if I did that, I wouldn't be able to go to basketball practice in the morning. If I did that, it would interfere with my trajectory. Yeah. They all had a vision.
Maybe. Like, I am ambitious, and I do think I've always been maybe a little bit too professional for my, like, if I say I'm going to show up to something, I'll show up.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what state I'll be in, but I will be there.
Okay.
And the same, I remember when I got the MTV job, which was, I just won a competition and moved from County Wicklow to Camden, and it was all a bit surreal, and I was probably thrown into a culture I didn't really understand, and it was exciting. But I was a bit naive and a bit green to what was going on. And I'd go to a lot of parties, and I remember this really cute actor guy asking me out, and I was like, oh, he's so cute, and he's so, and I was like, look how shiny his eyes are. And my friend's like, he's coked up. And I was like, oh, what? Drugs? And I've never to this day taken a drug.
He's so enthusiastic.
And so I was just like, why is everyone in the bathroom? I'm just on the dance floor. So I think I've just been, I've just kind of lived in my little bubble. Maybe it was naivety at that stage when I moved over. But I was 23 when I moved to London. And I'm really grateful I was 23 and not 17. I feel I had those 4 years at university that were quite informative. And I knew who I was.
Yeah.
So anytime I was in a situation, which I was, like when I was there for a while in London, where I was never into drugs because I never felt safe.
Yeah.
That was it, probably. I always felt like I wanted to be in control. I like a drink, but I never got completely messy anywhere because I didn't feel safe in that space. But I was okay saying no because I knew who I was.
You strike me as someone who, even if you were drinking, you'd wake up not entirely sure how you got home, but your handbag would be next to you and your phone would be on the other side.
Not always the phone.
You've lost phones.
Oh, yeah. Not anymore. I used to went through a stage of losing phones a lot. Yeah. Always finding them, though.
Yeah.
I'm not. When I say I wish I was less sensible, I don't mean like the drug taking, but I felt like I had a lot of weight, responsibility, and I was always very aware of what could happen.
And you're an only child of a single mom?
Yes.
Yeah. So you got like firstborn daughter vibes.
Yes. Yeah. Same.
Yeah. And single mom vibes and the only one. So you had to carry it all.
And also I feel that this is the biggest thing. Disappointing my mother. If my mother found out I ever did drugs, like there's no point living.
How are you coping with your life right now? Because you do so much. You're like presenting, you've got the podcasts and scary stuff too, like true crime and Britain's killer teens.
Yeah, I know.
How many killer teens has Britain got? Many.
Quite a lot. There's many series I can potentially do.
And you're acting, you're doing theater, and you do every single thing. And you're a mom, and you recently turned 40. So what does your life look like now in terms of the juggle?
I think if you stop, I don't know if you're the same, if you stop and think about it too much, then it becomes overwhelming. I just like the roller coaster of life, and you just, every day, I don't know, I've got some friends, especially mom friends, who try to like plan things for like in 2 months' time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, girl, I don't know what I'm doing in 2 days' time. Mm-hmm. Let me just get through the next few days. I know you have to plan a little bit more when you have a kid.
Yeah.
But I actually feel like I gave birth to my mother.
Yeah.
So yeah, like my daughter is like, I gave birth to the most incredible human being, and she's so kind and loving, but she's also exactly like my mother. So I just know it's going to be like that ab fab situation, which actually is really helpful because I'm like, oh, this is great. I've like, and I'm not taking advantage of that, but she is like the best person ever. So motherhood for me has, it's tough, it's hard, but I feel very, very lucky to have this little person who I made in my life.
And does she push you on, like, your mom, you don't want to disappoint her. She's got a taste of the private school. She's like, you need to keep working.
I know, got to keep her in here. Yeah. Yeah, but she's like, it's mad to, like, I've got a four-year-old who I can just see. You're probably the same with your kids. You can see their personalities like a few months old. Mm-hmm. I saw her, like, I think when she was tiny, she looked straight into my eyes and I was like, oh God, she's judging me. I need to be good at this. And I remember I was at a music festival during the summer and I came back that night and I had my boots, my mucky boots outside. And then the next morning, we're up having breakfast and she was like, your boots, why are they so mucky? And I was like, sorry, I'm gonna go and clean them now. She was like, oh, okay. She was, do you want me to help you? And I'm like, oh, great. Yes, do you want to?
She's like, mommy's been out at forest school again.
Oh, here she goes again. I was like, great. If you got little hands, you can get into the nooks and crannies. I think there was an expectation when you have a kid to behave a certain way. I love being a mom. It's the best job in the world. But also, I think it's really important to still have your own identity and who you are. And I think that helps them. I look at my mom worked full time with me.
Yeah.
And I remember when she said to me, when I was an adult, said, I was always really sad that I was too tired to play with you. Mm. And I don't remember that. I don't remember her being too tired. But I think that's a guilt that she's held onto. But in my memory, she was the only mom in my school that worked.
Really?
Yeah. So I didn't have my mom picking me up from school. I had a childminder, which I think she felt guilty about. But I was like, oh, my mom wears a suit to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And she looks really cool. And she's like working girl. And she's like Melanie Griffiths. And like, yeah. So for me, that's what I took away from it.
It's the share, like, my mama is a rich man.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, who bought your house? My mom did. Yeah.
And her mother was a really strong woman too.
Well, she gave birth to 13 kids.
Wow. I mean.
So and also it was quite small as well. And I think you probably had to for that generation.
Yeah.
I don't think it was easy. But there's also in my mom's family, she's got 8 sisters. And the women, and then there's the 4 brothers, but I feel the women are strong.
Yeah.
Like my mom's oldest sister is 20 years older than her because my mom's the youngest.
Oh my gosh.
And like she is out hiking every day and she's out, you know, she's always like, she does all these things for the neighborhood, like cleaning up and things. She's nonstop. And I think that's what keeps you young probably.
Well, the genetics are looking good for the test.
I hope so. Yeah. I don't know. I went to my mom's 70th with all the sisters and I was first to bed.
Because you needed to catch a bed.
I had to go to bed because otherwise around. Some of them didn't get beds. Yeah. But that's the family that I grew up in.
You're not sensible. You're just strategic.
Yes.
I'm not sleeping on the floor.
No.
I'm Laura fucking Whitmore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Respect.
So what does a week look like then? Because I do wonder this. Look, because I know you, I look on your socials and stuff and I'm just like, what is the setup? Because my husband's a stay-at-home dad. We have a nanny during the week.
Yeah.
Now 2 of the little ones have started 3 days a week, like nursery and reception. But I always look at you and I'm like, well, how's she doing that? Because I do see you out at night sometimes filming Britain's Killer Teens. It's crazy that you have a show called Britain's Killer Teens.
I know. I didn't come up with the name, but I did produce it. But yeah, but it's...
I see you like out filming late, then up. Then you'll have little snapshots of taking your daughter to school or you're doing the school run, so...
But I don't think my Instagram, my socials aren't my real life. If I'm, I really look and admire people who kind of show... you know, so much of themselves. I personally can't, and I think I have certain boundaries because I'm too sensitive, or I'm too like emotionally not in a place where I want to overshare that because of the judgment, maybe. Okay. So I think what you see is a very aesthetically pleasing version of my life, which isn't normal.
But you're still getting the shots. You're still going to all these places. Like, you're awake. Like, you seem to be awake 22 hours a day.
No, because I remember I had one job. I remember doing this job with, like, the Guinness Storehouse opened in anything Irish, I will be there. Or I will work at it.
I'm sorry that I missed the Guinness themed birthday party at the Guinness Factory.
That was very fun, by the way. That was very fun.
But this is something you would not have missed.
That was a job, though. I said I have to leave at 9 because I want to be home by 9:30 because I'm up doing the school run. And I was there with a group of friends, group of Irish friends, and I went at 7, I left at 9 because I said I was going to, but I was home asleep by 10. And then I get up at 6 the next morning to do, you know, what you have to do, breakfast and all that. And my friends start messaging me on the way home from the box. They hadn't been to bed yet. But that's the difference, because it might look like we had the same life and the same night, but we did not have the same night.
Okay. So there's a chunk of hours where you disappear where you go to bed and then you're back.
I will sleep. I will find my sleep.
What do you think your biological age is going to be?
I think my biological age is either going to be really young or really old. It's going to be like 27 or 72. I feel like in my head, mentally, I stopped at 27. Mm-hmm. I have to rethink when people ask my age. But when I was younger, I was always like a little old woman. Like when I'd go to house parties, my drink of choice was Harvey's Bristol Cream. Like, I love a sherry to this day. I'd go a little bottle. And I used to love to knit on the side. Ooh. So when I moved to London for the MTV job and didn't know anybody, you'd have a busy schedule Monday to Friday, but the weekends were quite quiet. Okay. So I joined Stitch and Bitch in King's Cross, where I used to go and knit scarves and try to meet people, which is not what a 23-year-old should do.
Well, that's what they do now. Like, it's hipster now but you didn't know.
No, maybe I'm living in the wrong time.
How did you stumble upon sherry as your drink of choice? Did you have it in someone's house?
The aunties at Christmas.
I see.
And then I was like, why is everyone drinking these house parties when I was 17, 18? They were drinking these like warm beers, do you know, like really warm beer that looked gross. Yeah. And I was like, just have a little mini sherry and buy a bottle of sherry. It'll last you for a while. You don't have to drink the whole bottle, you know?
And are the aunties as energetic as you are?
Yeah, they're more. I said they were up
the
past.
The hiking, all of them.
My mom's 70. They were up, jiving. That thing, it's like, it's dancing, but also looks like fighting because they move so fast.
Yeah.
And I was first to bed. I couldn't keep up with them.
You do get into heavy subjects too. Obviously, the killer teens and true crime and cyber stalking. Mm-hmm. Is there like a mental heaviness that you need to detach from when you do work like that? Because you're always mixing it up. But when you get into this tough stuff, how do you like unwind?
I mean, I'm still probably navigating that. And sometimes you feel guilty for jumping in between different genres. You know, you can go into something true crime, or I can go and I can sit and interview a mother and connect with a mother who's lost her child, who's given the space to talk to me about it. And there's a huge responsibility with that. But then also there's a part of me, like a few days later, that wants to go to a music festival or, interview a musician or do something completely different for that balance. And I think it's important to have both.
Yeah.
But it is. I don't know. When I was doing the first series, there was a therapist that I would talk to, which I've never really thought about that before. Mm-hmm. I never really thought about, the industry that we're in is a bit bizarre.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I've always had these weird boundaries that change sometimes. How much of my life do I show? I feel I should show to be authentic, but if I show this, then I can never get it back.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly, I even had that conversation with my other half about, oh God, like, yeah, I'm happy we don't show our daughter because look, Brooklyn Beckham. I'm like, no, we're not the Beckhams. But you're constantly thinking, how much do I give or how much do I not? And it's hard because I'm like, I want to talk about it and be open, but then I get really scared that someone will judge me for doing something the wrong way, and mentally I'm too sensitive for that.
You don't strike me as someone who's mentally sensitive when it comes to judgment.
I think everyone is, though. Do you not like... Because I don't think you are, but I bet you have that bit. If someone says something about you and it's something you already think about yourself,
yeah,
that's hard.
Stunning. Agreed.
Yeah. Successful, fantastic. But do you know what I mean? Like sometimes, yeah. And I think if someone says something about my child,
yeah,
I would kill them.
Well, plus you became famous at a time when there was just
upskirting.
Yeah.
I was like, Amy Winehouse was in Camden and I'd see her be followed around by all these paps. And I remember interviewing Britney Spears and just being really upset by the interview because I'm a huge fan of Britney and I love Britney, obsessed with Britney. Britney is queen. And I remember interviewing her and she was dead behind the eyes. Like, you know, when you're just like, hey, and and there was other women in the industry who weren't like that, but I could see, and that's, she was lovely and she was polite, but she wasn't, like, we weren't doing this.
She wasn't well.
No, she wasn't well. And
did you see that a lot with younger pop stars when you were working at MTV?
I remember, like, Duffy and Adele coming in around the same time, starting their careers and coming in for MTV, and I loved both of them. And look at Adele now, and, like, Duffy had horrific things happen to her, and she had to stay away, and it's a really tricky, tough industry that, like, who makes it and who doesn't, and they both have equal talents, and I've seen how women are spoken about, and I've seen what happens to women who are successful. So I think there was a bit of me at the very start of my career that wasn't famous but saw what was happening to other women. Like, remember, like, Lily Allen coming in when that everyone was like, oh, she's gone through a breakup, don't talk about it, or try and get something out of it. And I was like, no, like, she's here to talk about her music, let her talk about her music. But I could see how women were spoken about as opposed to when, like, the male artists would come in. So I think I had a real education in that period of time. And I only started MTV just, I did Amy's, like, the obituary that they did for MTV, and that was a really weird, you know, I'm working on an entertainment show, and then suddenly it was weird. It was so, I think I just saw how women were spoken about. So I thought, I'm not really going to give any more away about not that people cared about me, but as it, the least, you know, if you don't give too much away, then they can't knock you down when it all falls apart.
Then your husband, is a comedian, obviously. We know Ian.
I just need a little bit of lightness in my life.
But he presumably goes on tour and has to talk quite intimately about his life, about his marriage, about being a dad.
Yeah, well, it's weird.
Does he have the same sort of boundaries as you?
Yeah, we did speak. Now, it's changed, Catherine, because when I was always, you know, the unspoken rule was that you don't talk about me and we don't talk about each other.
At all.
And then,
because in the beginning, you guys wouldn't even do red carpets together or anything.
No.
And then it's like, well,
I think, because I kind of had my own career going on. And then people, I spent a lot of my life people trying to guess who I was going out with. Or, you know, if I spoke to a famous actor, I must have slept with them because that's what my life comes down to. So I think I fought that a lot. And I think it's nice to have your own identity. So I was like, please don't mention me in your comedy. And then it's hard because that's all your life is. And I was like, don't mention me unless I come across well. And actually he was doing a work in progress. My friend had been. And I hadn't listened to his stuff because I know I should show more an interest. Should show more of an interest, but there's other things going on. And my friend's like, you know, it's a lot about you. I was like, what?
Oh no.
But then I forget that, like, I guess, as a successful comedian, you have to speak about what you know. But there's still boundaries there. There's boundaries for him as well.
And you guys have, how long have you been married now? Like 6 years?
Yeah, 2020, yeah.
Yeah. And I think you guys have done it in a really nice way because now you host the podcast together and you have a few little projects together. We see you together sometimes. But it still feels like you are being private.
We constantly have these conversations going, oh, now because we do this BBC thing, does it mean, I mean, we don't talk about our relationship. It comes up sometimes, but we're talking about crime.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a degree in law. I have a degree in journalism. I would do the podcast with him if we weren't married.
Yeah.
But it works out really well because the studio's in our house. So it's convenient that he lives there. That's mainly why I do it with him. But it does, you have to constantly rethink what are our boundaries then? What does that mean? And I think when I worked on Love Island, you know, does that, I think there was this ownership. I remember one journalist going, well, you know, you both work on this show. And we got married ourselves and didn't tell anyone. And there was this disgust that we owed it because we worked on this show. So I think depending on what's going on, those boundaries probably have to, I don't know. It's a lot. It's also, I'm like, I just want to get on with my job. I don't want to have to think about, I overthink too much. I'm being too sensible.
It is sensible. But I think people would be surprised to know that you think about it as much as you do. And I see why, because, you know, you've been through the system.
Someone I've seen women being torn down for giving too much away, and it's affected me probably more than people realize, you know?
Anyone who's looked Britney Spears dead in the dead eyes would move forward and go, maybe I'm not going to put my daughter all over social media.
Yeah.
It's like it's a different world. Do you feel at least more confident in your own skin now than those early days when you started getting papped and started getting famous?
Yeah, I am. I remember one of my first big jobs was I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here Now. Mm-hmm. So I was on MTV, and then they used to do this after show called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here Now. It's so long. But it was live, and it was like getting, it was big ratings at that time for the after show. And we, I remember getting that job and going to Australia and being like, okay, this is a big step. Because MTV was great, but I kind of did a lot of stuff under the radar, even though I was shooting every day. And that show was, I got a lot more attention.
Yeah.
And I got told there was paps on the beach where I was staying. So I never went to the beach because I was really paranoid about being, you know, papped in like on my bikini or, you know. And I just wished I went in and swam. There's a bit of me, it's like, I wish I just went into the water and swam.
Yeah.
Because the sea looked lovely. But I was just a bit conscious of that.
And there are some jobs, I think a lot of people don't realize that there are some jobs that for some reason are more attractive to the tabloid culture than other jobs. Like if you are on a family show, like a Saturday night, like Strictly, for example, all of a sudden there are paps at your door for some reason.
Yeah.
And is Love Island a show like that, you would say?
And yeah, Love Island and Strictly. I did both of them. And you notice in that time, there's, you know, people outside your house and your front door. And I remember being really embarrassed. You know, Strictly, I was so excited to go on, but I lived in an apartment in Camden. My next door neighbor was in her 70s, so we shared the same front door.
Aww.
So I was just really embarrassed that Diana was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." You know, I was just embarrassed that there was photographers outside.
Diana loved it.
Diana had some great. She passed, bless her. She we had the same birthday, and she passed away like a year ago. And I loved living next to her because she got some great stories out of me, and we hung out a lot.
So you've been really outspoken about all kinds of things surrounding like autonomy and women's rights and all the right stuff. But also, how did you get involved in the upskirting campaign?
Yeah, well, I think it was, you know, in Camden and all these different brilliant artists and strong, successful women coming in, and you would see the pap shots in magazines the next day, up their skirt.
Yeah.
Like, and it was really shameful, like shame on you for wearing a skirt as opposed to shame on the photographers who would lie on the ground and take pictures up the skirt. And I remember once a picture of me getting out of a car, and it was so embarrassing. And they took a picture as I was stepping out, and it was, and I normally I speak up, but I was too afraid to say anything because I'm like, if I say something, it'll draw attention to the photo. So I'm not going to say anything. And also I remember speaking to another person in the industry who I have huge respect for, who's a bit older than me and who I love and admire and look up to. And I remember saying to her, "Oh God, like this is horrible." And she went, "Oh no, this is just part of it." And I realized, oh, the older generation of women are so used to this and so stuck. Not that she was saying it out of a bad, it wasn't out of badness, but I said, "Oh, you're so blinded and you're so used and accustomed to being treated this way that you think it's normal." I've come over from Ireland kind of fresh-faced going, "This isn't right." And actually, it was nearly like the next generation. It was Gina Martin who reached out to me because I had spoken a little bit about it. And I realized it wasn't just something that happened to women in the industry. It was happening to like little girls in their school uniforms on buses.
Crazy.
And it happened to a girl, Gina, at a festival. And there's actually, there was at that point, there was no law. And she brought in a law, the Voyeurism Act. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh God, actually you do have more power. And even these women who I respect and inspire me, but because they've been in this so long, don't realize actually, you know, change is possible and we can break the way a system has worked for so long.
Would you consider yourself to be an optimist in general?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm deaf because otherwise I probably still wouldn't be doing this.
I think that health is really going to come into these results. So we know how you de-stress by like talking about true crime with your husband and doing lots of investigative journalism and mixing it up. How important would you say a healthy marriage is and having people in your life who love you? Does that bring you stress? Because for me, I think having all these kids and a husband has aged me.
Yeah. Like, do you remember when you used to live just by yourself? Oh my God. Yeah. Those were the days. And you could just, and football wasn't on and you didn't have to, I just find I've a gorgeous other half. Like, he's gorgeous and like, we kill each other. Like, you know when people go, we never fight? I don't get that. I like a fight.
Oh, you fight?
Oh God, yeah.
They do say it's good for you.
Yeah, do you not fight?
He's more of a stonewaller, which is, I think, really toxic. If he gets upset, he doesn't really have the language to fight.
Do you do that? I do that thing where I just like talk so much at him that he just kind of eventually will go, okay, yeah.
Oh, good. So he rolls over.
He'll disagree at the start, but I'll win in the end.
So Auntie Teresa comes out.
Yeah.
And you guys like get loud. You fight?
Like over silly things.
Wow.
Like over, I feel like I'll have a conversation. Maybe this is, I don't want to generalize men. And he'll forget that conversation happened.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, we talked about this. Mm. And he'd be like, no, we didn't. I'm like, we did. Which is why I love the podcast sometimes. Because sometimes I'm like, can you actually rewind? Remember, I know it's not going to go on air, but we talked about it during the break. Can you see if I'm right?
Oh, so you'll pull up receipts from the podcast.
Yeah. Okay, you can't fight that.
And you think that being a mother is fulfilling? Aged you, yeah.
Yes, hugely. I think what being pregnant feels, something about being pregnant that like, I love my body. Do you, like, there's something about, you feel, maybe because you have this like young fetus with like all this fresh collagen inside you, you know, plumping you up. And that's probably the most I've ever loved my body. And then afterwards, when you're breastfeeding, it's literally like you feel like a prune. Like you feel like you're drained.
But it is weird for someone, probably, I'm guessing, who's so autonomous and you're always moving around and you're doing loads of things, especially for an independent person, I found that pregnancy was a little bit arresting because you don't have that autonomy. Your body's being used for a purpose.
Yeah.
You and your husband both get the same result that you share, but you put in
all the work.
So much.
Yeah. All of it. Like, I this is one bit of stand-up I allowed him to keep in. Right. But there was a bit about, you know, we, as women, we make the babies, like we build them, we like do all that. So for over 9 months, you know, to watch what you eat, what you drink, then you go through all the sickness. I was on air interviewing someone, Samantha Baines. Big shout out. She was on, a comedian. She was on the show. I looked at her and asked her a question. And I remember just walking off air live, vomiting into a cornflake box.
Live?
Yeah, but people didn't realize because she knew that, I think she thought, because I didn't tell her I was pregnant, that I was hungover. But she rolled with it. And I remember coming back on and I just remember thinking, pregnancy is fucking hard. As much as I say, you know, it keeps you youthful, I was like, as youthful in it, I feel like I'm hungover and I haven't had the night out. And then you do that and then you have to give birth to the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, then you got to feed the baby.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, surely he could do one of those things.
None of those
Just
things.
One of them. Just one of them.
Was this television or radio with Samantha?
Radio.
Okay, so she just kept
talking until I came back. And I went, anyway, so tell me about your tour. I mean, you've been in situations where you're hosting on, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then you go off and you vomit and you come back on again.
But again, in London, I think you're right. People assume you're hungover. Yeah. I'd be on my hands and knees in the underground vomiting. People don't bat an eye. They're like, another drunk bitch.
The amount of cars I used to get, because I used to get, when I'm pregnant, like very, like motion sickness, and I'd have to open up, you know, the driver, the Addison Lee, and just vomit out and close it. Yeah. And I'd just like, that Laura Whitmore, that's why people think I'm a partier.
Yeah, they're just upskirting while you're being sick.
Yeah.
Like crowning. That's what they deserve. A little crowning shot.
Yeah. Can you imagine if they actually saw that? That would scar them for life.
That's what they need. Mm-hmm. So instead of the gym, physically you must be doing something, even to relax.
I love like Pilates.
Okay.
I don't do sport.
No sport.
I'm not a sporty person.
Okay.
I'm an active person. Mm-hmm. I'm active in that I'm like my aunties in that I don't sit still. I potter around the house.
Yeah.
Even if I'm watching something, like I don't sit still. Or I remember I used to live in a house share, five of us at university. And sometimes my friend would come in from her room into my room, lie on my bed to chat, and I would just potter. She would just say, sit down so we can talk. I'm like, no, I need to do a million things as I'm talking to you. So I just potter. I feel that burns calories.
And are you one of these people who self-diagnoses with neurodiversity from what you see on Instagram? Like, is your Instagram telling you yet that you have ADHD?
I think everyone in this industry probably has ADHD to some degree. But I also feel like we're living in an age where if you don't, it's going to kick in, because I think with phones and, mm-hmm. and that's something I'm still debating with, how much I'm on my phone, or I'll go on my phone and I'm scrolling Instagram and I only meant to check an email. And I think all of that isn't very good for, you know, how we function. And I think that's definitely probably affected me. But I think a lot of people in this particular industry, there's a reason why a lot of people are ADHD.
Yeah.
But they're drawn to it. Yeah.
It depends on who you are and if you can handle it. Like the language that our generation use, you're like, oh, I knit a lot. They would might call that stimming. You're like, I just potter around.
They'd Hold be on like, a second. Yeah, now it all makes sense. No, I'm not diagnosed, but I definitely have a form of ADHD.
Yeah, well, it's good. It's worked for
but
you.
But I get shit done sometimes.
It's true. Mm-hmm. You can multitask. That's mm-hmm. what we used to call it.
Yeah.
And then what about, what do you eat? You've been pescatarian for 25 years?
Yeah, so I gave up red meat when I was 15. It was the year that I think Babe, the film, came out. I just think when the animals talk.
I know.
So I remember we used to spend, I don't know if you ever did this, but we used to go to the Gaeltacht in Ireland during the summer to learn Irish.
No.
So you'd go down the west of Ireland for like 2 or 3 weeks, and also sometimes to kiss boys.
Whoa.
Because I went to an all girls school, so that's when you'd see boys. and you'd stay with a banantee, which is a woman of the house, and it'd be like 10 girls in one house. And they would normally be on a farm because that's the areas where they speak Irish.
Yeah.
And I remember they'd, you know, you'd get your dinner every day and they'd be like, because I grew up in like a town, like near a city. Mm. So I'd look out and I'd see the field with all the cows. And then, you know, after a week, I'm like, oh, I thought there was 10 cows. And then you eat your burger. And then it was that, I think it was just that clicking of what I was eating.
Yeah.
Because you don't really think about it.
No.
And then I saw the film. So then I stopped eating red meat and I ate chicken and fish because I didn't care about the chicken and ducks in that film. They weren't as nice. Then there's a really stupid reason to giving it up. Then about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, that TV show on, I've got to stop watching TV. That TV show came out called Fresh with Sebastian Stan and Daisy Edgar-Jones. Did you see that film?
Yes.
Not to give away, but that this is the premise of the show, that he basically kidnaps women. Women to have a tough, you can see why I'm the way I am. I need to stop watching these things. But he kidnaps women and then slices part of their flesh off to put it in like a HelloFresh kind of vibe and send it to rich men who like to eat their flesh. And I was eating a chicken korma at the time.
Oh God.
And then I never ate chicken again.
That's great.
So and now I'm pescatarian. So that probably will change eventually. But
if
I really
you
like
see a film about fish.
Finding Nemo. Yeah, I'm not watching Finding Nemo.
No. Mm-mm. Oh my gosh. And that's probably happens.
I do think there's health benefits to it as well. I obviously wasn't hugely keen on it in the first place.
No.
I think some people have to eat meat if their body craves it or they don't eat the right balance of food. But I love vegetables and pulses and things like that.
You don't want to be cancelled for being a pescatarian. You don't want to offend people. I get it.
No, but I would say I grew up by the sea and I'm like, I really like oysters and mussels.
Yeah, you can have them. They don't have personality.
Thank you.
No, but my stepdad, he does not believe that we should be ingesting animal protein at all. He thinks it leads to like Alzheimer's and different things. So there are definitely health benefits.
Well, you look at like our teeth and stuff like that. Like our teeth aren't sharp the way like Mick, my dog's, is. I think living in London has made it easier for me not to eat meat.
Yeah.
But I think when I decided at 15 to stop eating meat, my mother was like, what the hell am I going to do with you? Thank you, Linda McCartney, for your frozen section and your frozen protein.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You were a trailblazer.
I was.
Yeah. Now every 15-year-old's in their kitchen refusing to eat their mother's meat. I think it's time to find out your biological age.
You almost forgot that was happening.
Well, it sounds to me like it's going to be very young. I just picture you as
very old.
It's not. I think you have elderly habits.
Yeah.
You like to knit, you like the sherry, but those are not things that are going to age you. Those I will consider for the purpose of data, just hipster vibes.
Okay, but I feel you might be let down though.
I'll be really shocked.
Okay. I'd like to get an older age because I feel, does that mean, well, is it your body? Yeah, I guess it's only your body, not your mind, because I'd like to think I've got an older mind, but I don't.
How old do you feel if you had to pick a number?
So I have this thing where like, I don't, do you believe in like old souls? Like my daughter is an old soul.
Mm-hmm.
My husband is a young soul.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell. Like he hasn't been on this earth a lot of times.
Okay.
Well, I feel like my daughter has. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I have, maybe not as long as she has. So I feel, I feel my soul is, because maybe that's why I overthink things so much. It'd be nicer to have a younger soul because then I wouldn't be bogged down by life as much.
Right.
But I think this is only going to go in my physical ability, isn't it?
Yes. Because,
so yeah, we'll see.
Well, we would like to invite Dr. Nicola Conlon, the lady science expert. Are you ready to find out your biological age?
Yes, please.
Your chronological age is 40, but your biological age is 20 years old.
Shut the front door. I will take that. Oh, yes. Ta-da. Oh, yes. Can I frame this picture? I just say I'm 20 from now on?
Are you kidding me?
And do I get a cake? This is like the best day ever. I actually would have been happy with older, though, as well.
Easy for some to say are 20.
Does this mean that I need to start like bringing like my like passport with me to get alcohol? Because, you know, if you're under the age of 21, you got to...
I think you look 20. I think you live 20. This does not surprise me in any way. Nicola, how do you get a biological age like this?
Well, when we were looking at your results, it was... So we look at different patterns of biomarkers in the blood, and different patterns suggest whether you're sort of coming back younger or older. And the pattern that you had is like quite a rare pattern that we see. Mm-hmm. And it usually means two things. Mm-hmm. So one thing it usually means is that you're doing some sort of extreme biohacking kind of routine, taking all sorts of different drugs and medications. But from what I've heard, that does not sound like it. Mm-hmm. The other one is more to do with genetics, mm-hmm. and kind of having genetics that may be helpful, mm-hmm. when having a very low inflammation in the body or having genes that are going to help you live well and long. So the fact that you were talking about some of your relatives, mm-hmm. especially the women on your mother's side.
90-year-old women still going strong.
Yeah, still going hiking, still doing all of that. One of the questions that I wanted to ask and was intrigued about was your family. So it does seem like it could be that element of genetics
that may be
quite protective.
Well, now he's on the phone already. He's like,
I wonder, is it the drugs thing as well? I don't know. It's good. I think it could be a Whitmore. It's an Irish woman, but it's particularly the women in my family, I've noticed, more than the men, are healthier.
Are they? There's no disease.
No, like sadly, my mom has lost her brother, and then some of her brothers have been very unwell. Mm. I feel bad if you're a man in our family, but the women are strong.
Really?
Even though they're older.
That's interesting, because actually what we usually see is the opposite. So women statistically will live longer than men, but women have what we call a shorter health span. Mm-hmm. So although they live longer, they usually suffer from more like chronic diseases and you know, don't age as well in later life.
Yeah.
You see more women with multiple sort of chronic age-related conditions. So that's a bigger clue to that. Maybe on the female genetic side, but it might be favorable.
These are women who are loud. Yeah. These are women who have tight relationships with their sisters, with their friends. They go out. Laura's busy. Laura has explained to us that she rows with her husband. She's not holding
all
it in.
All of this is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel bad if you ever do this to Ian, his body will be like, his will be really high.
85.
He's like, my wife has aged me.
Yeah, but he's watching football and gaming too much. Yeah, comedians are not healthy.
Not healthy. It's the gaming thing. It's because I don't game.
You don't game.
I don't game.
Reformer Pilates.
Reformer Pilates, and she likes sherry. A sherry.
Well, that can't be the takeaway from for our
this.
Audience.
Like, I don't drink sherry.
Would you say there are main points that a regular person could take away from your lifestyle that you think are contributing to this low biological age?
I don't know. And also it depends, like, I don't know. I try not to chase number. You know, when people like, oh, how old you are now, how do you feel about that? I think if you overthink, or same like when I had my daughter, like, you're a mother now, how does that make you feel? Are you tired? And yes, I am. But I think, don't think about it too much and live your life the way you want to. Like, I've never lived my life the way, I've got friends at home who I went to school with and they live a very different lifestyle to me. Mm-hmm. And I've got friends in London who live a very different lifestyle to me. And I just think you need to do what works for you. And even that career-wise, and, oh, you've done this now. Ooh, you did a theatre. Is that, like, how do you feel about that? You were supposed to, this is how we see you. I'm like, once you keep following and doing what makes you happy, like, that's my biggest takeaway. Just have a lovely time.
But you're pretty impervious to the path that other people think you should take, and you just...
Yeah, I said no to all the drugs and all those fabulous parties I went to. I still went to the parties.
Yeah.
Always go to the party.
And that's probably, in my opinion, how this biological age is so good.
Okay.
Because it shows that you can still kind of do everything. You can go to the parties. You can kind of live life and still have a good biological age because you had that sort of reins that were pulling you in going, actually, I'm going to go to the party, but I'm going to go home and be in bed by half 9.
I want to do something in the morning. Yeah.
So I think that's something important because for people, a lot of people, when they see results like this, they think, oh, it must be something totally unachievable. This person must not have a life. They're, you know, not doing anything fun, but you can do everything, have kids and get that balance. And it does sound like you have that sensible side where you're like, no, I'm going to do the fun. I'm going to live my life how I want to live it, but I'm also going to...
8 hours sleep.
Yeah, get my sleep. And
you know
sleep
what
is so
it is?
Important.
It's sleep. And that's actually what it is. Because I know a lot of... I remember when I had my little one and people were like, how are you doing it all? She slept. Yeah. And that's a luxury that I was given. Like that I was like some kids, and it's not the parents' fault. It's to do with like they could be unwell. Mm. And I remember I've had friends whose kids don't sleep, and that is a lot. I would like to thank God for a child that sleeps because I like to sleep. So that's maybe it's sleeping.
Has she slept really well since
good
she
sleeper,
was small?
Yeah, I know. But I know that's not normal, and I know how lucky I am, and I know that's nothing to do with what I've done. That's just because I gave birth to an old woman who likes to sleep.
You never know.
Yeah.
I think we're taking a lot of agency away from you. We're saying like,
I don't think it's genetics.
I think you have. You have a great, really positive energy. Mm. Nobody offered you drugs because you never looked like you needed any. You were on the dance floor.
People thought I was already on them.
You're high on life.
Yes. High on life and sugar. I like cake.
Well, how can Laura sustain a level of health like this moving forward? Because after 40, does it get harder?
So actually, I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
Oh God, here we go. But once you hit 40, it's all downhill.
We do know that there's been a study that showed there was a couple of different points in life where aging seems to suddenly speed up or biological age can suddenly jump. And 42 is one of them.
I'm 42.
Yeah, but you look great. And you're like, it's babies as well. Look at you. All the kids now.
But I think the main takeaway point really is that it's about how you balance everything because you clearly have a very busy life, like way busier than most people's lives.
But it's my own doing though. Like I could do less, but I need to
you
be
like
busy.
It.
But this is back to my aunties. My aunties, even when they retired, my mom retired and then she started looking after these kids. She's on the swan squad. So they look after the swans in the air. Like she does a million things because I think when you stop, it affects you. I think it slows you down. Yeah. So I think from looking at my 90-year-old auntie, it's just don't stop.
Yeah.
And that is brave because swans are violent.
They are violent.
Britain's killer swans.
That's the next series that I'm doing. But yeah, and my mom goes down and just checks the people aren't feeding bread to swans. Mm-hmm. I thought I used to feed bread to swans. Mm-mm. You're not supposed to.
Quack
can kill them.
Cocaine.
Yeah.
It's not good for them. Do you take any supplements?
No.
So it's not even like you have some amazing supplement routine that you can tell everyone to get this age.
Maybe it's just no drugs. No drugs and sherry.
Sherry. We'll take sherry away. That was Laura Whitmore, the queen of doing everything all at once, very well, and not aging a day. She's a mother. She's a professional. And her biological age is only 20. And if you want to hear more from Laura, you can watch her new series of Britain's Killer Teens, Oh No, or catch her on Murder, They Wrote, Oh God, wherever you get your podcasts. That would age me, those projects, but she does it with flair. If you enjoyed this episode, please tell me about it. I need that validation. Like, subscribe, leave a comment. Just let us know what you think. We've got amazing episodes from series 1 and 2. If you want to catch up on those, go on back, give them a watch. See you next time when I'll be even younger.
This was a Rayo Original Podcast.